This is the No Dogma Podcast. I'm Brian Hogan, and from Belgium, today I'm joined by Martin Baliau and Xavier De Coster, the founders of MyGut. Thank you for joining me this morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Ryan.
Good morning.
Could you both tell me a little bit about your own backgrounds before we get started?
Yeah, sure. So basically, both of us came from a consulting background. So we worked in the same company before we started actually working together on our own stuff. Company was Real Dolmen in Belgium, and I've been there for 7 years and a half doing consultancy with various customers, a lot of web development and Azure development. By doing that, I also joined the community, did a lot of talks and presentations at a number of events, came awarded MVP, and yeah, that's pretty much it.
Yeah.
And Xavier?
Yeah, so for me, pretty much the same background. So I started off as a consultant in the same company as Martin. My focus was mainly on application lifecycle management. So I have an ALM background. Also started off in a community, became an MVP. And like with all good things in Belgium, everything starts with a beer. So we had a beer. and yeah, talking about technical stuff, having some ideas, and from one thing another, we started off with MyGut.
So, gentlemen, what does MyGut do?
So basically, the base premise of MyGut is that we host your private NuGet, NPM, Bower, VSIX, and Symbols packages. I know that sounds a little bit vague. So basically, what we do is people can trust us with hosting their NuGet and Bower and NPM packages and so on. They can manage them, they can collaborate on them, invite colleagues or open source project members to work on them together, and then run package restores in any of those technologies in their own system. Next to that, we also have build services, which is an interesting one we developed during the creation of MyGut. So what build services does, it actually makes creating packages much easier than it should be. So for example, when we started in the NuGet space, it was really, really difficult to create your own NuGet packages. And what we came up with was build services, which is a convention-based build system, which just takes your repo on GitHub or Bitbucket. You give the URL to us and maybe an OAuth credential or something like that, and we build it, and then we host the packages on MyGut.
So for people who are not familiar, why would you want to host your own NuGet or Bower as opposed to using, I don't know, just a local computer or storing them on your hard disk?
Getting back to how we came to the idea of MyGut. So being consultants, we were often faced with the same problems over and over again. NuGet was introduced. People were, some people are living on the edge and immediately jump on it without thinking much about how to roll it out to the entire company. And people were facing issues, how to create packages, where do I put them, how do I share them with people, and most importantly, how do I secure them? Because main difference between NuGet.org and MyGut is, in fact, NuGet is a central public repository. So anyone can access it. So any package you put on there is accessible to the entire world. So we were playing with the idea of solving this problem. And instead of solving it over and over again with each and everyone that has the issue, we decided to build something that we could just point people to and offer it as a service. Now, why would you go for MyGut instead of using a local repository? Because we can offer extra services on top of it. Definitely back in the days, a local repository was just a file share where you had some packages on there. There was no database, so querying is really slow. And there's no real management on top of it. And adding security layer on top of it was often very cumbersome, or people were messing things up. So that's where MyGut originated from. So that's why you would prefer using MyGut over a local repository or a network share.
Yeah, next to that, there's a couple of nice additional things. One of those is that we, of course, are load balanced by default. So whatever you put on MyGut is on different locations around the globe. We have a CDN in front of it serving your packages. So even if you have a distributed team within one big company or within one big country, or you are on multiple continents, you basically get your packages from a location close to you. next to that, we also, being a service, it's also very easy to introduce new features and new technologies. So to give you an example, when NuGet came about with their new version in Visual Studio 2015, that was a new protocol. The previous one was an OData protocol. The new one is JSON-based. I think up till now, NuGet.org and MyGet are actually the only ones serving that protocol to their users.
The other thing I found very useful about MyGet was the symbol servers. Can you explain that for people?
Yeah, so the symbol servers are actually in addition to NuGet. So I think a couple of years back, NuGet struck a deal with symbolsource.org, and they've started hosting their symbols packages for them. And basically what it allows you is to package your source codes together with the PDBs, which are the debugging files, in a NuGet package, then publish it to symbolsource and then consume the symbols from there so that you could debug into third-party libraries like, for example, newtonstuff.json. Now, with MyGet, we have a similar service where you can just push both your regular packages as well as your NuGet packages to MyGet, configure it in Visual Studio, and then start debugging into any assembly you add through MyGet.
And people often wonder why they would be doing that. So why not just ship the symbols together with the package? And that's where performance comes in as well. You want to only ship the meaningful release bits to people and make sure the packages are small, reducing bandwidth and stuff like that. So, but when you need it, you would really like to debug and step through the code of the packages you consume. Maybe you find an issue, and often it's an open source project or a third-party component you want to report the issue to. So then it's really useful if you're able to debug the actual symbols belonging to the package.
I'm quite familiar with the NuGet side of things and the Microsoft side, because that's been my industry for many years. But you also mentioned a bunch of technologies that I'm less familiar with, like the NPMs and the Bowers. Could you go through them for a moment?
So one of the exercises we wanted to do last year was, can we introduce additional package types next to NuGet into our code base? So because we saw that DNX or Project K or whatever it was called then, what came from .NET Core and the new ASP.NET, we saw that they started promoting NPM as the solution to client-side libraries. So anything like jQuery or Angular you want to include in your project. So NPM was for us the most logical choice, since we already had a lot of .NET developers on MyGet, and they would start to use NPM packages as well. NPM was sort of the logical choice to look into. The way we started doing that is we basically reverse engineered the protocol NPM is using. So Fiddler is pretty much our most used tool during development. We look at what goes over the wire. We looked into the NPM repos, because NPM is also open source, of course. Although we're not that fluent in reading the funky JavaScript they sometimes have in some libraries. So you need some reverse engineering for that. But basically, we took the protocol. We built a small server project, which was completely unrelated from MyGet, just to see if in a .NET code base we could introduce the API that serves up NPM packages. And it turned out it did.
If you were to describe how MyGet is built, maybe from a technical perspective, and this will probably be our last technical question, we're going to move on to something slightly different. Could you give a brief overview?
So when we started MyGet, we basically started building the thing in Visual Studio, I think back then it was Visual Studio 2012 or even 2010 in our first prototype, and ASP.NET MVC 2 back then. Of course, since NuGet was an OData protocol, we also needed WCF for doing that. And those things are still there, but they are newer versions. So we're currently on the latest MVC version. We are on the latest OData service version, and so on. Next to that, in the background, we have everything running on Azure. Well, most of everything is running on Azure. So the website itself runs on Azure Web Roles, so cloud services. We have some background processing going on, which is running on worker roles in Azure. And as a database or as a data store, we are using Azure storage solely. So we are using table storage for anything that resembles relational data. We are using blob storage, of course, for hosting the packages and so on, which is a choice we made back then because Azure was new and hip, and we wanted to use a NoSQL technology to build everything. But it turns out if you start to dig into table storage, it's actually a very cheap and well-performing technology to build your data model on, even though you are missing several things that you may know from a relational database.
And you get your geo replication, I guess, very easily. You'd have sites in Europe, North America, South America, and Asia.
Yeah, exactly. But along the years, we learned that there's a couple of things you actually have to build yourself if you're using table storage for storing the metadata, for example. One of the things there is indexing. In a relational database, you typically go about normalizing your data and making sure everything is stored just once and you link everything together. In table storage, you actually have to forget about that and store your data multiple times, create your own indexing mechanism, and so on. But even then, if you built that foundation, it's actually a very pleasant technology to use.
So we're going to change tack quite significantly now, because you know, the two of you come from a software background that's very familiar. You build a technical thing, but you were telling me in the run-up to this that actually getting your company going and learning all the things about how to start a company was a great adventure for you.
Yeah, so first of all, there's only two of us when we started off, and being remote mostly, it's fun to come up with ideas and starting implementing things. Being technical, we like to code. It's always fun to have like a sprint grooming and decide on priorities. So what do we want to build? We want to build everything, of course, but how do we prioritize things? So we had some fun meetings about that, and we still do. But of course, we didn't start off with a business plan. We just wanted to have a playground and solve a problem. So until at some point a guy or a few guys told us, like, why don't you build a service? We would pay money for this. You're solving a problem. So at that point we kind of proved ourselves that we actually solved the problem. So that's a good validation to have.
So like Xavier is saying, the thing we started off with was a simple blog post. So we like to write code, we like to talk about it and blog about it. And we basically started building dynamic routing in ASP.NET on top of WebCF. And we thought, okay, so now that we can introduce variables into the URL, why not host something that's running WebCF? And that something at that point was just introduced, which was NuGet at the time, an OData protocol, which is WebCF under the covers. And we sort of combined that blog post with that technology. And so we had a list of favorites where you could just tag your favorites from NuGet, and you would have your own feed with your own favorites on that. Like Xavier said, people started asking, can we upload our own packages and so on? So we started doing that, and along came the realization that costs would go up while we didn't have a business plan or any monetization out of it, and a lot of hours went into it as well.
Were you hosting for free at this point, just for people who were asking you?
Right at that time, we were using the Azure MSDM benefits. So you get a few credits. Back then, I believe it was $100 US dollars a month to host your own stuff. So we were basically maxing out our MSDM subscription to keep everything up and running.
And then introducing a business model. So it sounds like you were both engineers tinkering around, playing with things, came up with something that people liked. And you introduced a business model after that?
Exactly. It's definitely not the way that I would go, knowing what we now know. I think it's very important to think about your business model up front, but apparently we didn't, so we had to introduce it afterwards. I think we've been running MyGet as a side project / hobby project for over 2 years before we realized, well, maybe we should ask some money for this because people are willing to pay for it and are willing to use it. So we started looking around at the different development services out there and looked if their business models could also apply to ours. So for example, GitHub and what Bitbucket was doing at the time.
Yeah, it's been a very fun learning exercise for us. Because at some point, costs were exceeding our benefits we had, so we had to ask for money. Otherwise, we would go bankrupt. It's it's been a fun exercise to find how we could ask money for this, because it turns out that developers are actually pretty cheap when it comes to paying for licenses and stuff.
Yes, we are, and proud of it.
We can't ask the world. No, we don't have the intention to ask this, but we wanted to make sure that we get out of the costs and we can still build something better every day for you. It's been a learning experience, and definitely when it comes to asking money and processing payments and all regulations regarding VAT and things that change over time, like I think last year the European Union decided to change things that we had to ask for the VAT of the customer's country instead of the country where we were basically offering our service. So all those kind of things are things we had to learn the hard way, basically. And we had to solve the problem without making too much cost and taking all our time to this. So that's where we introduced the storefront, like FastSpring, which we are currently using. And so, yeah.
Are you both full-time employees outside of MyGet, or is MyGet the main thing as well?
The
main thing now.
We actually are full-time employees outside of MyGet right now, although MyGet still still requires a lot of attention of us throughout the day and throughout the evening. So it's continuous context switching that we do actually. One of the things about introducing the business model later on, and the fact that we started thinking, okay, we should just cover our costs and not ask for more things from our users, is that you cannot actually build a sustainable business about going that route. So one of the things we also learned along the way is if you start with a business model, make sure you actually count yourself into that business model as well. Because if it's just our infrastructure, you cannot keep maintaining it like that. So luckily, we did a few increases there, and we are on the way to dedicating more time to this.
So when you say count yourself in, you mean to pay yourself, I presume?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Sorry, Xavier.
No worries. That's also where we, at some point, we did a small pivot when we introduced build services, because we didn't intend to build a hosted CI up front. Given the amount of support that we had to provide to people and that we discovered people were having issues with actually creating packages and how do they hook up their CI, how do they hook up their source repositories, and how do they end up with a package, we decided to just come up with this convention-based build service. And that's where we basically are trying to introduce a new feature and ask for some money so we can actually fix the problem by not taking ourselves into account upfront.
As co-founders with full-time jobs, how do you, let's say, I don't know, how do you act responsibly towards each other and the company to work maybe, say, an equal amount of time, to have an equal contribution, whilst also maintaining, as I say, another full-time job? Has that ever been an issue for either of you? Because I know that's something that kills a lot of small companies.
I think it's just been growing naturally on us. I know, for instance, I have two kids. I know Martin hasn't got any kids. So that's definitely a difference in time consideration. Now, at the time, we were also writing a book. So we've been crazy, if you think about it. So we've actually been writing two books about NuGet at the same time whilst we were starting with MyGet. So lots of effort went into writing documentation and trying to reduce the amount of support we have to provide. So we're trying to balance our time and try to have enough time left to do actual meaningful things that move our product forward, that move our customers forward, and don't hold us back by providing the same support requests every time again.
Yeah, one of the things is sometimes it is a challenge to balance work and to balance life. Pretty much that's the main issue. Balancing work is quite easy because you have a contract with your employer and you basically follow up on that contract and more. We have the stuff that we want to do, and eventually something slips to the next week or the next month, but we actually end up building it in the end. The main issue every once in a while is combining all that with life, which is not too easy sometimes. But so far we cope and we keep on coping.
You made a comment earlier that developers don't want to pay for stuff. And obviously billing and getting the money from your developers is very important. Has that been a difficult problem?
So, we basically expected when we introduced our business model and we introduced the freemium plan that nobody would ever upgrade apart from two guys who really liked us. That turned out to be a false assumption. So people actually liked to pay for what they are using. Although there's a lot of users out there that want 50 gigabytes of storage, which we also back up for $1.50 each month, which of course we cannot provide if you take into account all the backups, all the infrastructure, the fact that we have to add support to that and things like that. As Xavier mentioned, there's developers who don't want to pay a lot, and that's perfectly fine with us. We still have a free plan, and we're definitely not planning on cutting things down there because we think it's really important that people can start using MyGit and start building on best practices and so on. But if they want to pay us, they of course can. And if they want additional storage and additional bandwidth, they can move up to a paid plan. The other group of customers that is quite interesting every once in a while are the large enterprises, because they have a complete different mindset about how billing works, about how sales work, sales cycles and things like that. So most companies basically come to you, they expect a four-hour call with you to basically come up with whatever is on the homepage of the website. Then you have to provide that information, make sure that you have you get legal documents that you have to review, or let our lawyer review them. But there's a lot of work and effort going into that before you can actually make the sale. And even then, most companies have a 90-day payments term. So it actually takes a long while before you actually see the money, and their 500 developers are starting to hammer your service before that.
So these are not the guys paying the $9 a month with their PayPal account or their credit card. These are much bigger accounts.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I see. How did you pick a pricing model? Because I imagine that's something that's quite difficult. Or even how do you pick the price per month?
Yeah, that's basically also taking a look at what's living on the market. So we knew about some on-premise products that were doing something similar as what MyGit is doing hosted. So definitely we also take a look at pricing there. What are they offering? What are our advantages, disadvantages compared to them? And looking at what developers are willing to pay for instance, like a GitHub account or a private Bitbucket account and some hosted services that are often used today, we try to find a good balance between what we would be willing to pay for the same service versus the cost for actually what people are allowed to use. So we're not much playing with price on one hand. We're more playing with how can we put some quota on it so we don't so that costs don't go out of the roof. So that's the other lever we can use.
Pricing is a really difficult thing. And I think if you ask any company out there, they will all say the same thing, that pricing is a difficult thing. Over the years, we've read a couple of books on pricing, and it seems that there's a couple of models that you can actually apply. The most logical would, of course, be looking at your costs and putting a price on that and making sure that you have a nice revenue on top of that. But there's psychological pricing. There's looking into what you would pay yourself for the same products. There's A/B testing where you basically put up different prices for different people and see what gives you the most revenue and the most customers. So I think pricing is definitely something that every company is looking at continuously, and every company is probably bad at as well.
And then, did you consider, or are you offering things like professional services, support contracts, things like that? Because I imagine it must be difficult when there's only two of you and you have full-time jobs.
It's definitely something we've been discussing internally. So it's definitely something we've looked into. But problem there is that we're a worldwide service. We're a software as a service, so that would mean that we would have to provide support everywhere in the world as well. So I mentioned earlier we're working remotely, even when we live like 20 kilometers from each other. So yeah, it's again the work-life balance, I guess, between traveling all the time and visiting customers, helping them out versus actually building the service. So yeah, it's something we've looked into, but we haven't proceeded.
Yeah, it's a difficult thing to do all those things yourself. So support, of course, is one that we are doing ourselves. And we've been thinking and discussing about making a premium support level that people can pay for. But then again, we know that our support is usually quite fast. Like if you contact us, you will get a response really, really fast usually. And we think that's also our unique point of sale. So people actually like the fact that we have fast and good support, and we don't want to cut back on that. Because people already know about it, and it's one of our unique selling points that we have currently.
It's also about not doing everything ourselves all the time. So we know the product, we know how which questions comes in, how to answer them, what the typical problems are. But we're also looking into finding the right partners who can help us out with the actual problems the customer is facing. So we're trying to reduce our support in, up to product support and the most basic things, then the most typical problems people are facing. We do go the extra mile, but we can't go there all the time. So it's about finding the right partners, and that's also where our freemium model and our MVP offering and open source offering comes in, because we have a great community in .NET and outside. So we have smart people in the world who can actually offer the solution to the customer that is facing the problem using MyGit. So we can jump in when needed, but often people are doing it themselves.
How do you find partnerships like that?
Well, we're still part of the community, and we still join conferences, and we meet people. We're always available online, on Twitter, on through email. We find people, we talk to people, and often they come to us. How can we help you out? How can we use MyGit to help our customers? It's a bit of a mix.
When I was looking at MyGit, I also had a look at a couple of your competitors. Do you review competitors? Do you have communications with competitors?
We do both. So I think we installed all of them on our machines and gave them a try. And on some, we had a good laugh. On some, we were slightly scared. So there's a couple of good ones out there. There's a couple of other ones out there as well. So we do look at what they are building and what they are providing. On the other hand, we don't see them as competition. They are working in the same space. They are working on the same problem. So we have a couple of them. We have regular chats with and communicate with on what they are planning, what we are planning, what the community is doing, what we are seeing in the community. And we sort of work together on things like that. So one of those companies, for example, is Inedo. They do ProGit, which is an on-premise offering. I shouldn't probably make too much of a commercial out of it, but they actually have a quite good product, and we've been working together on a couple of things like synchronizing feeds through MyGit if you have different branch offices and things like that. We have a feed discovery protocol, so where you can basically add a meta tag to your blog, for example, and people can just enter your blog into our feed discovery protocol, and then the protocol will register the NuGet feed itself. We don't really see them as competition. It's more as competing colleagues.
it's also funny to see how they are sometimes copying stuff from our service. You'll see some services popping up that are mimicking some behavior we're actually offering today. So it's kind of cool.
Is the main differentiation between the two of you that they're 100% on-premise and you are 100% remote?
It's one of the differentiations, yeah.
Oh, sorry, that way I shouldn't say 100%, the whole thing. But so would it be, I guess from a sort of competitive perspective, if they were to switch to being cloud-hosted and redundant around the world, would they then be much more of a competitor to you and less of sort of a partner?
That's a good question. I think they will stay a partner. They are competitors, but they are also colleagues, and will probably continue on the same approach we currently have.
Well, it's actually quite funny because there's actually one of those competitors out there today. If you look at what Microsoft VSTS is offering, there's also a package management service in there, which is, yeah. If you look at it, it's like where we were like 2 years ago with MyGet. So there's some similarities in there. And if you look at what we're offering to .NET Foundation, well, Microsoft is basically one of our main users on MyGet as well. So you can look at them as competitors, but at the same time, they're actually supporting us in using MyGet as well, and offering nightly builds to the community. And so, yeah, I wouldn't look at them as pure competitors.
And you're saying Microsoft internally use MyGet for developing whatever it happens to be, Visual Studio or something like that?
Actually,
even publicly.
Sorry, I couldn't understand.
Sorry, even publicly. If you look at .net.myget.org, you'll see the nightly feeds there for Roslyn and .NET Core, and there's lots of MyGet feeds out there that are being used by Microsoft to push nightly builds to.
Yeah, so a nice one is that .NET Core, for example, the entire development that led up to the release last week or 2 weeks back has been done on MyGet in public. So all the RC1 and RC2 bits were available from MyGet. And if you would do a package restore, all those packages would actually be served by us.
From a sort of, sustaining your company perspective, does it worry you then that they are building something like the VSTS, which could or potentially will compete with MyGet?
I think it's up to us to just keep on pushing forward and differentiate our service. So I think it's good that there's more choice for people to decide on which service to use, because it's keeping us on the edge and pushing us forward and trying to improve things further, because that's actually one of our key values we want to provide, is that we want to reduce friction, because as a developer we hate it when we have to do yak shaving and have friction all the time every day. So it's a problem we want to solve, even if it's only related to package management. I think it's keeping us sharp, and it's a good thing.
Yeah. On the other hand, it also brings some nice benefits. Like, for example, one of the things we've always wanted for the NuGet client, for example, is a single sign-on functionality where you could just open up Visual Studio, register your MyGet feeds, and then whenever it would have to authenticate, it would pop up a dialog. You would just click on your live ID or whatever ID you have linked to your MyGet account and start consuming that feed. We've been asking for that a couple of times, and everything was always put on the backlog, and it would happen eventually. Well, the eventually apparently happened when VSTS wanted to do the similar thing. So we now have a pull request open against NuGet to also support MyGet in a single sign-on approach.
Or any other package management service for that matter.
Exactly, yeah.
So people can build their own extension.
As a small company with two employees, two co-founders, and the revenue stream coming in from sales, do you look for investors, or is that something that's not the most relevant to you?
It's not something that we're actively looking for. It's something we're always open to. If someone wants to talk with us, we're definitely open to that. And in the past, we've had a few talks with some potential investors. And yeah, basically, all of them are nice guys. So if you hear about sharks or investors being sharks or whatever, they don't seem to be. But it's always good to have a chat and see where they can bring you and you can bring them. But up till now, we didn't really have a good match there.
From knowing a bunch of small startups over here in the US, I think what often people forget is the non-technical side and the non-cool side of companies. One of the things I guess you have to deal with particularly are things like selling across international boundaries, dealing with tax. Do you do that yourselves, or do you have a service to help you out?
Well, actually, we used to do this ourselves. So we've been putting a lot of hours in that one. And then we figured out Well, for a small cost, we can actually have someone else do this for us, and we can focus again on the things we want to focus on. Of course, that's not 100% true, because you still have to make sure that your invoices are there, and you still have to do some of the administration and accounting, but a lot of things are taken out of hands. And one good example is, for example, the VAT ruling in Europe.
Yeah, so the VAT mess, or VAT moss, if you Google it, is actually, it's been an annoyance to us. And that's also the point in time where we decided that we had to move to a service to do the billing and accounting for us. For those who are not familiar with it, it's a change in the regulation that as a software as a service or an e-commerce service, that you have to charge the VAT of the customer instead of the place where you offer the service. So at that point in time, we were looking into FastSpring and Stripe, and we already had PayPal. Now, FastSpring was quite fast in stating that they would be supporting us in everything related to VAT and tax declarations, and they basically take all auditing and security out of hands for us, so we don't have to worry about storing sensitive data like credit card information and all of that that stuff, which is a good thing for us, because being two people, we wouldn't be able to cope with that. So for a small price, we've basically put a storefront in place and did some integration. They have a nice API, they have excellent support, so it's been a big win for us.
I have a note from you in the prep for this that banking is a sick world.
That is very true. So when looking at switching payment provider to Stripe, for example, we also looked at doing things ourselves or going into more alternative services where you would require your own merchant accounts to collect credit card information and things like that. And we sort of figured out after a couple of weeks chasing information, chasing pricing and so on, that banks are actually sharks. They want a lot of money from you for basically no service, which probably isn't entirely true because they also have regulations to comply with, but it is a sick world.
Sounds like they're the opposite of developers who want a lot of service for no money.
Yeah, that's quite true.
I have a friend in Ireland. He has a company called Pagefair, and we did a podcast about his kind of an advertising exchange. I'm not sure the exact term, but he sells advertising. And one evening, his company, it was a birthday party for one of them, and all of a sudden their phone started beeping, server alerts were going off, and it turned out that they had received a massive influx of interest and ads going through their system, and all of a sudden they weren't able to scale. Has something, or something like that must be a potential for you. Has that happened, or are you prepared for it?
Well, it definitely has happened. So one nice story there is back in February this year, me and my wife were together for 13 years, and we decided to take a long weekend and go out on a long weekend and not care about anything else but us as a couple. Well, that turned out to be quite interesting, because at this time, the Microsoft Teams building .NET Core started pushing packages in parallel to MyGet, and we do have some auto-scaling in there, but at the moment, back then, we were not really prepared for the massive influx of incoming NuGet packages that were being uploaded and consumed. So that weekend, those 4 days, were actually spent coding and fighting against the incoming waterfall of things. The good thing is we had a free load test, and we came out much, much stronger without incurring too much downtime. Some slowness in the service and so on. So the only thing that was really bothered by this event was our weekend.
Yeah, it also has allowed us to, that's the good side of these things, it has allowed us to basically grow our service and scale way beyond what we would ever dream of. Looking at some numbers here, I'm seeing that we get like 2 terabytes of packages pushed to MyGet each month, and that's quite a lot. Looking at the number of downloads, we just exceeded 17 billion downloads since our existence. So that's huge.
I had no idea. That is massive. Because when we started using MyGet, I think you were offering a service for $7 a month. I think it's now $9. But to have 2 terabytes of data being pumped up is enormous. And then, of course, you have to, I presume, back that up, have redundant copies, have it in multiple locations. Is that fair?
That's where the retention policies also came in. So we had to design a feature so people could clean up their own feeds and do some housekeeping there. Because that's also a feature that helps us to reduce costs and reduce the amount of storage we store. But we indeed have to back it all up and keep different versions of it. And so, yeah, it's huge.
Yeah. Locations, and then we also have the CDN and people consuming packages. So in total, we get roughly 2 terabytes of data pushed into our system, but each month we also have 7 terabytes of data going out of the system towards consumers. And some of them are really small packages. Other people are hosting their Octopus deploy packages on MyGet and basically do their deployments from MyGet with massive 100 or 2 megabyte packages. And one of the things we did there was look into using a different CDN. Because we were using the Azure CDN back then. And apart from a number of issues we had with them, they are also ridiculously expensive in terms of bandwidth. So we started looking around, and being a startup ourselves, we found a startup doing pretty much our story, but in the CDN space. They are based in Switzerland, called KeyCDN, and we're really happy with both their performance and pricing model, and we've never had any issues with them so far.
One of the things I imagine you must hit is that as 2 developers who are very familiar with the various technologies, that you probably use the likes of NuGet in a particular way. But with something, you know, like 2 terabytes up and 7 terabytes down, you're dealing with thousands of people who probably use your service in different ways. How do you handle, let's say, feedback or bugs or support requests that come in?
Yeah, we do have a user voice, so people can suggest issues through our user voice forum. People can always email us as well, or find us on Twitter and raise issues or support provide feedback to us. We also have a newsletter, so we occasionally send out a newsletter, just keeping people informed about changes we're doing or new stuff that has been announced. And it's also it happens that we are collecting feedback through the newsletter as well, or we just send out a survey to people to collect some feedback. Typically 1 or 2 questions, very short, very focused. We also monitor how features are used, so we collect some telemetry on the service, so we can see what is well received or what not. So we're using various ways to gather some insights on how people are using the system.
Yeah, and as we sort of started this podcast with, developers want everything for free, but developers are also very, very vocal. So whenever they need something, we will know they need that thing. To give you an example, last week, both of us were on vacation, which was, of course, the week where .NET Core was released, and we got a number of requests that people wanted the latest stable version of .NET Core on our build machine, so, of course, we knew we had to do that.
I guess the lesson is, in a 2-man company, don't go on vacation at the same time.
So yeah, through that, it's often a challenge to fix that.
Any final notes before we wrap up this morning or this afternoon, as the case may be?
I think if you are just looking into NuGet or NPM or Bower or whatever, or you're doing open source, just go to our website, mygit.org. If you are open source or organizing a conference and you would like to get some licenses sponsored or things like that, you can simply go to mygit.org/open source. And if you have any questions, feedback, or whatever, just hit us at support@mygit.org.
I'll put those links into the post around the podcast. Well, Xavier DeCoster and Martin Balia, thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you, Brian.
Thank you.
what can I say? So much more, so much more.
The opening music was Return by Nisi 23 from the album 11 and 12, and the closing music was Lifebound Friend by Alan Nerio from the album Hollow Bone.